Welcome to this podcast brought to you by the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries Diversity Action Group. I'm Rosalind Rousseau, and I'll be hosting the podcast today. I'm a member of the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries Diversity Action Group and the IFOA's Sustainability Board. In recognition of International Women's Day and Women's History Month, we wanted to celebrate our female leaders. And today I'm joined by a few of our incredible female leaders: Louise Pryor, the President of the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries; Marjorie Nguenya, a past president of the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries; and Lucy Say, deputy chair of the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries Sustainability Board. Now, although I'm certain you all hardly need any introduction, it would be great if you could please tell us each a bit about yourselves and who or what do you believe has enabled your path to leadership, both within the profession and individually. Louise, would you like to start?
Wow, that's quite some question, isn't it? I've had a very unusual career in that I started out as an actuary, qualified as an actuary, then decided I wasn't really enjoying it and went off and did other things. I did a PhD in computer science. I worked in the software industry and sort of gradually found myself, because I kept on doing things to do with risk and uncertainty and so on, I sort of found myself somehow sucked back into the actuarial community. I'm constantly surprised that I've ended up where I have ended up. So it sounds boastful to say this, but actually I'm absolutely thrilled. You know, I'm president of my professional body. That is a big deal. Yeah. And I'm also, I will shortly be chair of the Ecology Building Society. I've been on the board for a couple of years and I've just been asked to be the next chair. And I simply don't know what's enabled it. Looking back, I have always been quite visible in the actuarial world, because even when I didn't have much to say, I jolly well said it, because I was worried that women weren't saying things, and in those days that younger members weren't saying things. So I made sure to say things. And possibly because there were so few women in those days, I've often been quite widely recognised within the actuarial community. And I think... you're sort of asking what's enabled my path. And I think that's one of the things. And the other thing is that the things I'm involved with now are things I really care about. I'm not doing them just because because I need the money coming in or whatever. I'm doing them mainly because I care about them. And I think that really shines through and has helped me get to this place. Unworthy though I am, I think I'd have to add to that.
Incredible, Louise. And Marjorie, would you like to add to what Louise has shared?
Thanks, Rosalind. So I trained as an actuary and many other things in the past, and I'm now a non-executive director and an executive coach. I really enjoy working with people, and that has always been part of my story. For much of my career, I was an actuarial consultant. I'm particularly enjoying working with people to bring to life their wildest aspirations, and I'm also learning a lot in the process. I love the revelations that come with the dialogues that I'm having in different ways for different people who are at different stages of their lives. And it's those little aha moments that bend their life path just so, but bring with it such satisfaction in this journey that is life. I'm learning my fifth language, Spanish, which I find very enchanting. So what's enabled my path to leadership? I would say a desire to experiment with different environments, roles, and geographies. I've moved around a fair bit, both within countries and outside of them. I've had a lot of support from informal mentors, male and female, and I have a number of people who play this role in my life, whether they realize it or not. They offer me perspectives unlike my own, and I count on their wisdom when I have significant life or career decisions to make. I've also been inspired by leaders who've come before me, particularly those with whom I share common ground, so gender-wise, ethnicity, or otherwise. And then lastly, I think just having comfort with the idea of failure and never having regrets, always seeing anything that doesn't go to plan as a lesson and believing that it turned out the way that it was intended to, and being at peace with that, it really allows me to move on and not to stay stuck.
Wow, thank you, Marjorie. Finally, Lucy.
Well, thanks, Rosalind. I'm going to carry on with the strange career stories, I think. So I actually trained to be a vet before I switched and retrained to be an actuary. So I think similar to both Louise and Marjorie, just having those two professions, I think, in my background and learning to be comfortable with being uncomfortable and relearning and just not being afraid to try new things has been a really important part. I think I've been surrounded by strong women in my personal life. And I sort of think I've never seen being a woman as a barrier to achieving things. I've always been encouraged by my family to do my best. And I've been really lucky in that respect. I think from a professional perspective, there's been loads of opportunities to get involved. And so I think when back to 2019, when I joined the Sustainability Board, it was Louise, I think, that interviewed me. And she'd already set the wheels in motion of sort of a lot of the initiatives we were doing on the Sustainability Board with a greater representation of women on that board. And that really has carried through with the chairs that came after her. So particularly Nick Spencer, Sandy Trust, they've both had sort of just transition as part of their board objectives. And we've had a real drive to ensure that we're widening the participation of that board. So we've recently set up the Early Careers Board, which is led by two brilliant board members, Sarah Renan and Trinani Ramakrishnan, and they're just doing really great work. And it's figuring out how we get those youth voices into the board. I think one thing I've always been conscious of is sort of finding leverage points, so areas where you can really make a difference and acting on those, because it's always easier to sort of push on an open door. And so when you're sort of thinking about where you want to be in your career and places you want to go, looking at those areas. And like Marjorie, I've sort of had mentors and people that I can really confide in, particularly in the workplace. I sort of say I've got people that I can talk to, they're in confidentiality, and throw ideas around with, and they'll really challenge me, and they'll sort of say, you know, what is it you really want? And I can go to them if I really need to make a hard decision. Alternatively, I've got other people who I would say help me get things done. And by that, I mean, I go to them with an idea and they help me action it. So I might want to do a secondment in a particular area of the business, and they'll help me network with the right people to allow that to happen. And I think having that sort of senior support and those two roles have really, really helped. So, yeah, that's sort of my story.
That's really inspirational, Lucy. And Louise, you won't know, but Lucy actually interviewed me for the Sustainability Board. So gets carried down that way. It's wonderful. Thank you. So I think we've spoken a bit about opportunities, but I wanted to ask about opportunities in the context or the backdrop of the fact that the IFOA has recently launched its diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy. And so would you mind sharing your thoughts on the opportunities open to female actuaries and leaders, potentially with any suggestions on how to effectively tap into these? And I think, Lucy, you touched on this briefly in your introduction. Would you like to elaborate a bit more on that, please?
Yeah, and I think there's sort of two things I think about in this area. One is sort of what we talk about quite a lot, I think, within the business community, and that is how we progress women into senior roles. And that addresses part of the problem. I think the thing that's important for us to look at as a profession is how we attract people into the profession in the first place. And that's a question of more sort of socioeconomic background, that's social mobility, it's education, it's making sure that everybody has the opportunity to have a successful career, essentially. And I think with that's a slightly harder question, problem to solve. With the issue of progressing into more senior leadership roles, there's a lot of work that's been done around that. And I think looking at sort of part-time working and how you can still progress with that, it's sort of how do you support those with caring responsibilities. And that's about how you just support people in the workplace, really. And something that comes up time and time again is entrance back after career breaks. So I think, again, that's something that's really important to look at. Now, this is probably a bit of a shout out to Aviva. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to do this one, but we have a very good parental leave package. So one of the things that actually I really love talking about is we have 6 months parental leave for men and women, and that is largely taken up by everybody. And what that means is that the sort of caring responsibilities then are carried through sort of at home. But I think we need to see more companies doing things like that. I think having that support in place helps both men and women. On the side of getting people into the profession, I think that's around making sure that our qualification process is as open as possible. So making sure that people have alternative pathways to access that qualification. And going out and telling people what actuaries do and what we are and the opportunities that are available, because I think unless you have that visibility, then as a younger person, you don't know that that career exists unless you know somebody who already does it.
Louise, Marjorie, I can see you're both nodding. Would you like to add to the opportunities you think female actuaries were able to tap into?
Yeah, I think there are barriers, and there are quite subtle barriers too, so especially to leadership positions, because I keep on hearing about the need for gravitas, for example, or for credibility. And you think of someone with gravitas, and what sort of person do you see in your mind's eye? I see a very solid looking middle-aged white man, I have to say. And you have to think, actually, what do we mean by gravitas? Are the words we're using the right words? Or are there, in fact, different ways to perform these roles? And I believe very strongly that we as women shouldn't think that we have to perform roles in the same way that they've already always been performed, that we can find different ways of doing things. And the same, it's not just women, that anybody can find different ways of doing things. But that does mean that one of the things that we can do as leaders and as influencers, I guess, is to try and get out of the habit of using the shorthand expressions, the shorthand words that we tend to use to express things, because quite often they don't convey what we want. I am seeing, actually, in the actuarial world, that there are many more women in the sustainability field than in many other fields. And I think that is partly due to the fact that it's a new field for actuaries. So there isn't an established hierarchy there. There isn't an established way of doing things. So that there you're not necessarily seen as different because you're a woman. You're seen as different because you're doing sustainability stuff. Which just applies to everyone. So I do think there are huge opportunities for women in that area and potentially in other emerging areas, which, because they're emerging, I don't know anything about them. And so I think that's something to think about? Are there areas where we can be the trendsetters, as it were, and preferably set the trend so that we're not laying down hard and fast expectations of what sort of people we need and what it means to be an sustainability actuary or an X, Y, or Z actuary, but to look at people very much in terms of what they can bring rather than our preconceived notions about them?
I've never thought about it that way, and just hearing you speak about it in that context really makes me think, as a female, how I was even just drawn to sustainability in the first place. And so, yes, I agree with you, and definitely encourage others to do the same, to break barriers in that regard. Marjorie, what are your views?
Thanks, Rosalind. There are a few opportunities that come to mind. The first is that role models play a special part in getting others to believe that they can succeed. And each of us can choose to actively play this role in our workplace, in our communities, in our families. For example, in the 160 years of the UK actuarial profession, there have been four female presidents, and all four have been in the last decade or so. So it's certainly true for me that I was inspired to put myself forward by the two women that preceded me. And I can only imagine that that has a ripple effect, and that's why we've seen this uptick in the last few years. Another opportunity, which is perhaps not so gender specific, is that we have opportunities to trailblaze, to carve out new areas of work that are not already crowded out. And this could, for example, be a collaborative effort with members of other professions to present an unmissable value proposition. For example, what would happen if actuarial and data science met environmental science? Oh, the wonders that could emerge. There are also opportunities to break away from the world of formal employment and to take entrepreneurial risks. And I'm always inspired when I hear of actuaries who've done just that. A particular favorite for me is in Kenya, a company called Pula, and they're co-founded by an actuary and non-actuary. They are an agricultural insurance and tech company that designs and delivers innovative agricultural insurance and digital products to help smallholder farmers enjoy yield risks. And it really helps these farming communities to increase their incomes over time. So something that was begun as a small project has become international and far-reaching in terms of its societal impact. Something that was co-founded by an actuary who could very well have been a woman isn't in this case. So I think there are many opportunities available to us in this environment that we're in. There is a lot of awareness of advancing women and trying to remove the structural barriers that could potentially prevent women from getting ahead.
Thank you, Marjorie. That's fantastic. I think what I wanted to do, and we've probably already covered this, was consider the opportunities in the context of the challenges. So do you think there are any challenges that we haven't covered in our conversation that we've just had?
I think there are. I think that we touched on it briefly, but it's the barriers to actually becoming an actuary, to doing the studying, taking the exams. When I was doing it, and this is admittedly more than a couple of years ago now, everybody used to say that if you got married, that would cut your qualification time by a year or so, if you were a man. If you were a woman, it was going to add a year or so onto your qualification time. And the barriers are the uneven sharing of burdens within households. There's a lot of research that shows that even in two career households, even where the two people concerned are have comparable careers, that the women typically, if it's a male woman household, that the women tend to do much more of the household duties, the unpaid duties, the family and caring duties. And this is a barrier. There's no question it's a barrier, because it takes a lot out of you doing this sort of thing. Now, this is not something that the IFOA or indeed any single employer can address on their own. This is a big societal problem. But I just wanted to highlight it because it does apply to actuaries as much as to anybody else.
Certainly. Thank you, Louise.
Louise, I'm nodding in agreement there, and I think it's certainly one of the things that nobody can have those household conversations aside from the people in that household. And I almost called out my husband as one of the reasons for my success, and that is that, you know, he's a true partner, and that means actually supporting me in my work, and I support him. But those are challenging conversations to have. And I think it's a chicken and egg situation, because you have a gender pay gap, right? And so if your male earner is as standard the higher earner, then if somebody has to take on more household duties or childcare or care for elderly parents, then it tends to be the higher income that's protected. So it's trying to unpick all of those things. And I think the other thing is just thinking through where we are with our sort of governance structures. So, for example, when we decided to tackle representation on the sustainability board, we actually had to make a conscious decision to start reflecting on ourselves and saying, well, we're not diverse enough, and we want to be. And it's really important in the sustainability area, because there is a very clear link between sustainability topics and socioeconomic topics. So you already bought into that, and your board culture needs to be built into that. And so I think there is space certainly within the profession to do that with across different boards. It may not always be such a clear relationship as it is on the sustainability side. But I do think it's really important. And it's the other thing I think we probably haven't picked up on is the sort of compounding inequalities. So where you have different characteristics that together compound inequality, and that has come at, it's very, very obvious when in the sustainability space, you look at the sustainable development goals, there are 17 of them. And there's a reason there are 17 of them. It's because they all come together and they all interact. And I think the UN gender lens that they put on their Sustainable Development Goals progress report looks at how women and how progress is made in that area. And so it's things like, you know, extreme poverty, women are more likely to be at risk of that. It's food insecurity, that's much higher in women. And so it's looking at all of the compounding factors that stop women progressing in a structural way. In terms of solutions, I think it's really important to design cohesive solutions that bring people together. And so when we have these conversations about solving much easier problems than sort of no poverty, but, you know, women's progression within a company, for example, it's not pitting your part-time workers against your full-time workers or your men against your women. It's about saying, what changes can we make that make all of our working lives better? Whether you need to leave the office at 4 o'clock to pick up the children, to walk your dogs, or to care for elderly parents, actually putting those changes in place makes it better for everybody.
Couldn't agree more, Lucy. Marjorie, you're nodding. Would you like to add something?
Thank you. Yes. Just to put numbers on what Lucy and Louise are sharing, a McKinsey study found that women are less mobile and flexible because they spend so much more time than men on unpaid care work. That's more than 1.1 trillion hours a year compared to less than 400 billion hours for men. So that includes caregiving at home. And those statistics would continue to improve, I hope. And tech changes should help to make women's working lives more flexible, for example, by enabling remote working. So if you have organizations, whether they're employers or professional bodies, that are tasking themselves with identifying and dismantling those structural barriers, that can really go a long way. I think a potential challenge, again, which is gender neutral, is how to remain relevant in a rapidly changing context. And for those who are giving care to elderly parents or to their children or to anybody else, trying to keep their skills up to date is probably even more challenging. So what ways can be introduced, what solutions can be crafted that will help people more easily remain relevant in the working world. This also requires a mindset of continual self-development from the people themselves and going outside of their comfort zones.
And definitely looking at how people re-enter the profession. And that's not something that's unique to the actuarial profession. In fact, my other profession have been looking at this very same thing, as well as how you get people that have had career breaks back into the profession. And as you say, as things move on very quickly, particularly where you have, for example, new regulation coming in, how do you get people up to speed, and how do you sort of hire people for their potential rather than their experience? We all know experience is important, but there has to be a balance there.
And I think something which is coming to mind that our chair of our diversity action group mentioned to me very recently was, as women, how do we become better allies? And I think it's really, in a way, sums up what we've discussed, because there are problems that are bigger than ourselves, which we've covered today, but they're also small takeaways and small steps we can take as females in our own organizations and in our own lives to help become better allies to other females. If you could please leave our listeners with an inspirational takeaway. So, for example, if you were to look back on your journey to leadership, what would you say to your younger self? Who would like to go first?
I'm happy to go first. So I would say, don't take yourself so seriously. Work is not everything. Your career is not everything. And you need to allow yourself opportunities to experience the broadness and the variety of life. And when you stumble, stand up and walk tall, because you will stumble, and learn from those experiences rather than perhaps taking them very personally when they happen. Earlier on in my career, I took everything very personally, and it took me a while to learn that it was just part of the journey and it was part of the growth experience as well.
So I'm not actually sure what to say to this. I've been, you know, when I go to careers events and people say, well, what's the secret of your success? And people always say, well, you know, I had this at every stage. I had a 5-year plan of what I wanted to achieve in your career. I've never had a plan, ever. I've always taken what I thought seemed like interesting opportunities at the time. I think I've been very lucky, because it's just been lucky that it's turned out the way it is. And I think that's part of what Marjorie means about not taking it too seriously, not thinking it's your fault all the time. A lot of what happens to us in our lives is essentially luck, that you happen to be at the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time. And it's not your fault. It's not. Remember, as someone once said, you may be the star in your film, but you're not the star in everybody else's film. So appreciate that they're, you know, that it's not that everybody's out to get you or to hinder you or whatever. But I think my overall advice, which has already been, I think that Marjorie brought this up, is just keep learning. The world doesn't stand still, and you've got to keep learning, keep up with it, and don't be afraid to try new things. They may not work, but they're usually quite fun to try.
Thank you, Louise. I think that'll give our listeners a lot of comfort, because often as females, we are placed under a lot of pressure to have a plan. And for those of us who don't necessarily have a plan, we think there's something wrong with that. And so I think your answer is absolutely spot on there. So thank you so much. And Lucy, would you like to?
I'm just glad I've been able to benefit from those words of wisdom, because they are really brilliant. But I think I'd sort of build on that and say that if you're not enjoying something, change it. It's okay to change your mind, and there are very few things that can't be undone. So it's important to sort of explore and find out what excites you. And then once you have that, make sure you're surrounding yourself by people that want to help make that happen for you. And take a break. It's good for you. go for a walk. Just, you know, it makes my brain work much better. Having some time off to think and do something completely non-career related is good for us all.
Thank you, Lucy. So I just want to thank all of you today because it's been an absolute pleasure to have this opportunity to chat. I hope our listeners have enjoyed it as much as I have today. And be sure to check out the IFOA's Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Strategy on their website. And also, if you'd like to volunteer for the Diversity Action Group, you can follow us on LinkedIn or look out on the IFOA's volunteer vacancy page. Thank you for listening.